everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a great show for you today. Everyone stayed up late to watch LeBron do a couple things. We'll get to that in a second.
I ain't gonna lie.
Okay, well, don't.
I
don't.
Do.
That's why I'm exhausted. AB could be dealt any minute now. Kevin Durant, he's got 1 foot out the door. But as we mentioned, we're starting with a big number. That number is 32,311. Haven't started a show with that number before. LeBron James making history last night. Sporting sneakers with a message to Michael Jordan. Why? Because he passed his idol for fourth all-time on the NBA's scoring list. Now trailing just Kareem, Karl, and Kobe. LeBron said this ranks up there with winning a championship. Emotional tribute to him during the game. Nice from both teams. Last night, after the game, more from LeBron on the big milestone.
A lot of stuff that I've done in my career. This ranks right up there at the top. We're winning a championship. For a kid from Akron, Ohio, that needed inspiration and needed some type of positive influence, MJ was that guy for me. And I watched him from afar. Wanted to be like MJ. Wanted to shoot fadeaways like MJ. Wanted to stick my tongue out on dunks like MJ. Wanted to wear my sneakers like MJ. I wanted kids to look up to me at some point like MJ, and it's crazy, to be honest. It's beyond crazy.
Guys, we spent so much time this season talking about LeBron's legacy and what going to the Lakers does for it and the championships and all of it. But this particular accomplishment, CeCe, what does it mean for his legacy?
Well, for LeBron, it's well-earned. You're talking about a player, too, that doesn't want to be known as a scorer. Even in his interviews of late, I saw Brian Windhorst. He was doing some stuff, and he was like, LeBron despises being known as a scorer. He wants to be known as a pass first, and you can hear that after the game. But it speaks to the great ability he has as a basketball player, not only to score the basketball, but his ability to be able to stay healthy, his ability to be consistent, to play in the number of games that he's played in. The longevity is basically second to none. We could talk about Karl Malone, we could talk about Kareem and LeBron. That's just a rare group of guys that are going to be able to withstand the wear and tear. It's not something, when you looked at LeBron James in his youth, in his first 4 or 5 years, say, man, will he be the all-time leading scorer one day in the NBA? Like, there's no chance. Will he ever pass Michael Jordan as a scorer? There's no chance. Well, now that especially since LeBron's turned 30 and he's gotten into fitness and the eating, like that part's been at a different level. It's an amazing accomplishment. But if you want to be considered one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, this is something LeBron's got to have. He's got the playoff where he scored more than Jordan in the playoffs. Now he's got the regular season because, say, 10 years from now, this will mean a lot more than it means today.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people that didn't see Michael Jordan, even though they swore up and down that they did. All right? They watched videos and everything. And there's going to be a lot of people that only saw a little bit of LeBron. So it's just going to be basically list. Nick and his list. People making lists. How many points? How many assists? How many rebounds? And LeBron's going to be in rare air and the only one that can get on the scoring and assist list to that high mark that he's at. It's going to make him a special basketball player. So he's going to have to be included in the conversation. Was he one of the best basketball players ever? Which we can answer now. To me, he's still not the best basketball player ever, and that's Michael Jordan. So even though he passed him in playoff points and passed him in regular season points, Michael and what he was able to do in the playoffs, the six championships, the six MVPs, the five MVPs in the regular season, 9 times first team, all defensive team, that's why Michael Jordan is the best player. So these are things that LeBron's going to need to continue being in the conversation with MJ.
Because, as C's point is, the statistics are going to be overwhelming and avalanche in LeBron's favor. And the overall counting stats are already an overwhelming avalanche in LeBron's favor. But we're going to talk about this throughout the day. So we don't have to do LeBron versus Jordan hardcore right now. I want to talk about what this moment was. Because LeBron alluded to it and said it. This is the most important individual accomplishment of his career. The most individual. So not he said he lines up right with the championships. He talked more about how the championship in Cleveland kind of set aside from the other two. But this means more to him than the MVPs. When LeBron got to the league, I can definitively, without a question, he believed, oh, I'll be a league MVP one day. I'll be the best player in the league one day. I don't think he thought until, as he mentioned, maybe the last 5 to 6, 7 years, I'm going to score more points than Michael Jordan. I could finish my career with more assists than Magic and more points than Michael. That is what makes him such a singularly unique basketball player, because his entire basketball ethos, to much criticism over the years, has been make the right play, as opposed to the Jordan ethos, which was make the play. And it's not a value judgment about which one's better, but there was the idea of, for a lot of players and a lot of players that idolized Mike, Iverson, Kobe, that means I've got to do it by myself scoring. LeBron's ethos has always been, we've got to make the right basketball play. But what he, and so to have that mindset and still have scored more points and still be climbing on the list is remarkable. And what LeBron said about the kid from Akron, he had a long quote about the inspiration that Jordan was for him. And I think that's important. This is why this was such a big moment for Kobe. Because Kobe, people thought Kobe was maybe holding on at the end because the last big thing he wanted to do was pass Michael Jordan in points. To surpass your idol in what your idol did best, which was score the basketball, it's got to be an unbelievable feeling. And you saw it on the bench where after it happened, put the towel over his face, seemingly right, overcome with emotion.
Is any of this dampened at all by the fact that the Lakers just aren't playing that well? I mean, does it take away from either his legacy or his accomplishments or this particular accomplishment at all?
Well, you'd like to be talking about the playoffs, but this is such a huge accomplishment that it supersedes everything else. And I think that part of the emotion, part of it's passing MJ, but I think part of it's too, the season's over with. And I think that this is the only significant moment LeBron's going to have this season. So when he was sitting over there and they were playing the tribute video and all that, but to know, man, the playoffs is going to start next month and we're not going to be involved in it, that's hard to stomach, because he's still chasing what he calls the ghost of MJ. He's still chasing it. Even though he went past it, he's still chasing it, because who Michael Jordan was in the postseason. So, yeah. Last night was a big moment for LeBron, and the idolization of Michael, I don't think LeBron is telling the full truth. I believe there's even a greater degree, because that was the type of impact that Michael Jordan had on, not only on the generation that we grew up in, but the generation and the two generations to be able to follow.
To me, these are two separate stories. The Lakers' struggles this season and a culmination of what is a now 16-year NBA career that is still going on.
But the reason why I said that is because he will have that purple on. He will have that Lakers jersey on. He's like, oh, man, well, LeBron, when did he pass Jordan? Oh, in his first year with the Lakers, because people won't be following it like we do, all right? But they will be able to identify. LeBron's got that different. It's just no different than we went to the Heat. It was like, wow, he looks different in that jersey. In this moment, this iconic moment, will be with him in the Lakers uniform. And under that story was, man, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that will continue to be a story if the Lakers era for LeBron continues on this trajectory. If they don't ever get it together, if they don't ever have a long playoff run, then yeah, it will just be individual statistical accomplishment. But to me, these are two separate things. This was a guy, you say, see, you heard about him when he was 14 years old, 15 years old from William Wesley. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and I went back and read that article this morning when he was 17 years old. And the headline of the article is "The Heir to MJ." And the first paragraph of the article quotes Michael Jordan asking a 17-year-old LeBron, "Where's your mom? Where's mama?" Because they had met each other about a year prior. The most hyped athlete ever, not only living up to the hype, but somehow exceeding the hype. That is the story of LeBron James. And last night was another mark on that side of the ledger, passing the man a lot of people believe to be, if not the greatest basketball player of all time, certainly the greatest scorer of all time. And now, as C mentioned, more points in the playoffs and more points in the regular season to go along with all the other stats in the regular season and playoffs.
We are just getting started talking about LeBron. Chris Broussard will be out here to give his take. We'll take a break now. Coming up, where will Antonio Brown end up? That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. We'll get to Antonio Brown in just a second, but first, couple plays from last night. Marquette, Seton Hall, Miles Powell goes up for it, but Ed Morrow Jr. denies him.
Look at this.
That is denied.
Oh, yeah, that's in the first row. Go get it, young fella. You can't do a underhand scoop that close to the basket with a guy.
Great timing.
Check this out. LSU's Marlon Taylor skying for the alley-oop jam against Florida.
I thought this was a bad pass. Wow.
Good. Now, that's embarrassing right there. Back door, catches the alley-oop.
Oh, he lands on his head.
LSU's got a good basketball team, too, now.
Oh, yeah.
They could do some damage in March Madness.
All right, Cavs-Nets, D'Angelo Russell broke out the sham god against your guy, Nick.
Jetty. My guy, Jetty Osman. See, you tweeted about this play, right? You sent out the video when it happened. Look.
Yes. Oh, no, I was watching this one. I love watching the Nets, man. They get up and down the court. They shoot threes, and he's such a great story there. Came out of Ohio State, should have stayed in school, drafted by the Lakers, couldn't develop. But last night, Brooklyn was saying, thank you, Magic Johnson. The crowd was yelling.
Maybe most improved player in the league.
Oh, yeah, he's going to win that award this year.
Wild play results in an incredible dunk by Zach LaVine.
Let me see this again. Oh, that's a great save. Now, you know he's going to go up and get it.
Pretty.
One of the best dunkers alive.
Pretty, pretty.
Is that Archie Diacono with the save?
People don't talk about it, but if you're a free agent, Chicago's got some nice young pieces. I know AD hadn't mentioned he's from Chicago, but
it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one.
All right, moving on to the Antonio Brown saga. It has become a saga. According to reports, the star wide receiver expects to be dealt by the end of this week, despite AB seemingly bruising his trade value recently with a number of questionable comments. The yellow mustache notwithstanding, the Steelers are hoping to recoup a first-round pick in the deal. Washington, Oakland, Tennessee still in the mix for AB services as well, with three mystery teams out there. C, in your opinion, the best fit for Antonio Brown is where?
Well, the best fit for him, if we're being honest, would be to repair the situation.
Pittsburgh.
Yes. Call Ben, have someone call Ben. Hey, man, hit my line. Let's get together. I'm sorry. Yeah. That would be the best spot for him. Pittsburgh Steelers, because they are convinced this situation we can't salvage. But they're going to take a huge salary cap hit by trading him. Now, they're going to save the $2.5 million roster bonus, but that cap hit that they're going to take, can they put a championship team? So I just want to say that first. The best place for him is to stay in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. But AB, blonde mustache, blue hair and everything, that's not going to happen. It's going to be, I believe the Oakland Raiders is the best spot because they have the draft capital to be able to do it, especially at the towards the end of that first round. And John Gruden needs a big-time playmaker. I believe that they can come up with enough creative things in that offense to be able to get AB the ball because it's not only who needs a wide receiver, it's who can get him the football. You can't think that a guy that's had six straight 100-catch seasons is not going to want a football. So don't suggest some place where they can't get it to him from a creative standpoint or from a do they have a quarterback that can get the ball there to him. So I just believe that the Raiders, their lack of a wide receiver, they could basically take the pick that they got from Dallas.
Well, that's the key, right? Is it would Gruden also needs some good PR. Some good, like, to change the narrative a bit.
I just prefer some good football.
Right, players. But you can't get good football until September. And so...
No, good football players.
Sure. But and the point I'm making is, if the narrative is you essentially traded Amari Cooper for Antonio Brown, that's a win.
Sure.
That is a win for the Oakland Raiders. Now, Antonio Brown does not make a football team, and Antonio Brown could be going from Hall of Famer Big Ben to lame duck Derek Carr or potentially rookie Kyler Murray. We don't know who the quarterback in Oakland would be. I think from the team's perspective, which team should be most aggressive in getting Antonio Brown? The Raiders is who I was going to say. From Antonio's perspective, that obviously would not be first, second, or third on my list of preferred destinations.
I want to go to Green Bay.
Yes.
I want to go to Aaron Rodgers. They could utilize him. I believe they're going to get off of Randall Cobb and his contract. They could utilize him, give him a bonus. He's at a good number right now. Give him a little bit of a bonus because he's got a couple years left on his deal. That's what I would do. I'd probably give him about $8 to $10 million to sign, which adds another $5 million to his base salary. It's going to make him make around $18 million over the course of that time, and let's do business.
How important is the quarterback to Antonio Brown? He's so talented. Some would say, regardless, he's going to have those numbers. But how important, when you're thinking of a destination, is the quarterback on that team?
Well, I think for his purposes, it obviously is maybe the most important factor. Like, if he's listing his preferred destinations, who their quarterback is, do they have a stable quarterback? Do they have a good quarterback? Should be at, if not, certainly near, if not at the top
of the
list.
But let's look at the teams, because he's not making this choice. You have Washington, Oakland, and Tennessee as your top three. How comfortable are you guys with those offenses and those quarterbacks?
Well, but that's the problem, see, with
when... Well, that's the problem when you force a trade.
Right.
He's not... And to me, most wide receivers, Larry Fitzgerald is a realist. Most wide receivers, they're like, man, I want to go right and get some guaranteed money. I want to go, they're going to throw it to me a whole bunch. A lot of wide receivers, they're ignorant like him. They're like, I don't care about the quarterback. I don't think, well, AB, him and his agent, they don't have any control. But I don't think he realizes how important the quarterback is. So I don't think he's thinking about quarterback because if he was, he'd stay in Pittsburgh some type of way.
And maybe he doesn't have the quarterback situation ranked as high as I would think he should, because one of his initial preferred destinations was San Francisco, and nobody knows if they have a great quarterback or even a good quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the biggest unknowns in football. We know that they think they have their franchise quarterback, and they paid him accordingly, but Washington has the most unknown quarterback situation in all of football. Tennessee is a guy who in year two looked like he was going to become the player who's drafted out of Oregon to be, and then was bad in year three and was injured and mediocre in year four. And Oakland, we just mentioned, like, I'm not certain Derek Carr is going to be their quarterback next year, and if he's not, it's going to be a
rookie. I think Derek Carr is a lot better than Mariota.
Sure.
So in Oakland, I believe he's a better situation throwing the ball down the field and consistency throwing the ball. In Tennessee, they're a running team. You watch Tennessee play, man, they're getting ready to run the ball. They have a bust at wide receiver in Davis from a couple years ago. He hadn't reached his potential. So, I mean, that would be a tough situation for AB. Like, I mean, he would go from one of the most prolific offenses, the most creative offenses, to one of the most predictable offenses.
The team you mentioned, though, which is also the team that I had written down as the square hole, square peg situation,
Green
is Green Bay. They have an extra first-round pick. They have a great quarterback. They have a new head coach. You have a maybe frustrated Aaron Rodgers. They might move off Randall Cobb.
Well, we did say there are a couple of mystery teams.
Right,
that could be one of them.
For all those reasons, Green Bay, to me, is the perfect situation.
The thing about Green Bay is they don't have the culture. Their fan base, the people who see them on a weekly basis, like, you think they want one of their players rolling up in a green Bentley, Rolls Royce? You think they want him some Black Hawk helicopter? No, so, yeah, like, from a football standpoint, but who they're selling to, their season ticket base, like, in that little tri-state area?
Sure.
He doesn't fit that. And that's a problem in Green Bay. Look at the type of players that have ever been like Antonio that were in Green Bay. Andre Bad Moon Rising, after he turned over, all right? He wasn't a problem. Typically, those type of players aren't attracted to Green Bay, and Green Bay and the organization have not been attracted to them.
And the fact that you have to go all the way back to Andre Rising, because I was trying to think since then, who is, like, the alleged problem child Green Bay has gone out and gotten? And I can't think of one.
I played against Green Bay for a long time, twice a year. That's just not something that they do, and I don't believe this player is going to change that.
And their biggest free agent acquisitions of the last generation are guys that are not only great players, but really good good people. Charles Woodson, right. Julius Peppers, guys that have none of those concerns.
Yeah, you got to factor in the quarterback and also the coach and also how his personality, like you mentioned, fits in with the culture of the actual team. Take a break. Coming up, could the Cowboys defense hold them back from the Super Bowl next season? That's next on First Things First. Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Fox.
Let's go, Sean. Let's do this, bro.
Time for us to go viral. LeBron James passing Michael
Jordan.
I'm getting
Sean Porter a message.
Last night for fourth place on the NBA all-time scoring list. Still talking. And his former teammates Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye had a special message for the Kang. Take a listen.
It's a huge accomplishment for a guy like him. It's shown his consistency of ball hogging. We're talking about Bron. We're talking about Bron, 13 away from Jordan. He was a huge ball hog.
He never passed
the ball.
Right on. Why don't you try and pass like the all-time assist leaders? Why don't you try and pass John Stockton instead of trying to pass
come
Kareem?
Come up off the rock, buddy. How about dribbling the air out.
Can you do that? How about that?
It's ridiculous. It took him long enough. What is this, 19 years?
Yeah, I got it. It took him years.
Years.
God, if I kept playing, I would have passed.
I'd shot 14, 15 times a game.
Wow,
it was crazy.
What have you done?
Yeah. Anyways, congrats, man. You deserve it.
Nap's a better guy.
Yeah, you owe me a bottle.
Channing needs to hurry up and retire so he and RJ can take over the Players Only broadcast and do a
funny
Mystery Science Theater 3000 style broadcast. They're great.
Richard Jefferson's got a petition in Cleveland so that Shannon Frye can start his last game there. He's passing around trying to get people to sign it and everything because it's going to be Shannon Frye's last year. Those are LeBron's friends.
And
that's what your friends say about
him. And by the way, RJ, friend of the show, signed up for Twitter yesterday finally, right?
Yeah, check him out.
Richard RJeff24 on Twitter. You pointed this out to me. I hadn't seen it till this morning.
Yeah, man, you ain't up with social media.
Oh, I'm not up.
Man,
no, keeps me
you're
up on
there
the gram.
Sleeping and everything.
On Twitter.
I got to keep you fresh, man.
Snapchat.
Me and your wife, we the only cool things you got in your life, boy.
Hi, excuse me.
He said it right. He said it correct. My son's pretty cool, too.
You forgot one. That's
yeah, okay. He's my son. He forgot
yeah,
him.
That's not what he forgot. Time for stories to start your morning. Lincoln Riley stuck up for his former quarterback yesterday. Riley called Kyler Murray a tremendous leader after criticism of Murray surfaced after the combine. C, do you agree with Riley's assessment?
This is what I know about Lincoln Riley. Man, there's a handful of NFL owners that would love him coaching their football team. So Lincoln Riley is highly respected in the NFL. Man, Oklahoma knows that. That's why they gave him a contract extension so no one can grab him. Yeah, I respect Lincoln Riley, but this is what you got to do for your guys. You have to build stand up. When someone has a report like that, you have to build a stand up for them. That's what the college athletes always need. And Lincoln Riley did the right thing, stand up for his guy.
And yesterday on this network, right after the show, I thought Jenny Taft had some really strong comments supporting Kyler Murray. People don't know. She does a lot of college football coverage. She talked with Kyler multiple times throughout the year. I think she covered four or five Oklahoma games. The people that know Kyler seem to be going up against this Charlie Casserly report. Now, that doesn't mean he interviews great, but the leadership stuff can be a different category than how well you interview.
Well, go ahead, Jenny Taft.
She did a great job.
All right, to the NFL. Now, Landon Collins was not tagged by the Giants earlier this week, and according to reports, they could have traded him for a first-round pick this past season, but did not make the move. Nick, what is your reaction to this report?
This was my beef with the Giants' move, is the lack of consistency in philosophy and a plan moving forward. I don't mind you not trading him before last season. You thought you could be good. He's one of your better players, even if he has problems with coverage. When you're 1-7 and the season's lost and you see what you got for Eli Apple, what do you think you're going to get for Landon Collins? A first-round pick would have surprised me, but a second-round pick wouldn't have.
Yeah, I'm very surprised by this. And let's not forget, just because the NFL, we got involved in trades the last 2 years, this is not something the NFL general managers and front office people are used to doing. We are seeing a new time in the NFL. So thinking at the trade deadline, this is the NBA, it's not. And they shouldn't got rid of Landon Collins because the Giants did not know at that time if he was going to be part of the team moving into the future.
All right, let's move on to the Boston Celtics now. They got a win over the Kings last night in a Gordon Hayward game-winning basket. But a nice start to their West Coast swing so far. Two games, two wins. Nick, how big was this for Hayward and the Celtics?
It was big, particularly because Gordon wasn't following up his big 30-point game with another big game. He had 10 points going into that moment. He had just fouled Buddy Hield on a three.
Bad mistake.
The Celtics were up three, and he fouled Buddy on a three to allow the Kings to tie the basketball game. But so this is a great moment because this would have undone a lot of the good feelings that they got from blowing out the Warriors if they take a couple step backs against a good fighting for the playoffs Kings team.
I think it was a good moment because we have seen Gordon Hayward lose his confidence. We know he's not as athletic. He didn't have a great game, made a bad mistake. Mentally, he could have been in the dumps. But they gave him the ball at the end. Kyrie wasn't playing or wasn't in the game because of a thigh contusion. So Gordon Hayward making a buzzer beater for the Celtics in a tied-up game, that's a huge moment moving forward. The last two nights, the Celtics, man, they've really improved. Looking forward to see how they do the rest of the month.
All right, let's talk some football. Moving on to the Cowboys, coming off an NFC East title. Their goal, like all 31 other teams in the league, improve their team. But unlike a lot of those other teams, they won't be doing it by signing a big-time player in the secondary. Dallas has no interest in signing safeties Earl Thomas, Landon Collins, or Eric Weddle due to their high asking prices. CC, you think we should be worried about the Cowboys' defense?
I'm not going to be worried about their defense. I think that they're going to be, when you're in this new salary cap era that we have, there's a few positions that you just have to do patchwork. Like, you have to go around the league and see, man, what's one of these guys can I get at the right price to be able to patch up my lineup so that I don't go over the cap. If you talk about tight ends in the last several years, they've emerged as major pass catchers, game changers. The safety position, it hadn't. Last year in free agency, man, there was no market. So people talked about potential collusion with Eric Reed, but also there wasn't a market for safeties. There will be a market, but throughout the NFL over the last 5 years, the value of safeties has gone down. Just we've seen the emergence of running backs go up in the last 5 years. Safeties go down because they can dictate to the offense what coverage you're playing in based on what their skill set is. So a lot of times when you sign guys like Landon Collins, where you know he's going to be an in-the-box safety, he gives me an indicator before when I come out the huddle of what coverage. So I have a huge advantage when you have these guys who can't be dual safeties, where they can't play in the hole deep and play middle of the field and also play in the box. And there's only a few of those guys out there.
Teams right now would rather have a really good third corner, a really good nickel corner.
He's more valuable.
Right. In today's NFL, when you're playing three wide receiver, what, 70%+ of the time? Like, that's been the paradigm shift. Now, as far as the Cowboys specifically, man, this is what we were saying throughout the year when we were prognosticating what the team would look like next year, that they are going to have to get better production from essentially the same team. I know a lot of the folks in Dallas were talking about all this cap space they're going to have. Okay, but then we started checking it off. You want to keep DeMarcus Lawrence? Not only right now are they keeping him, but it's at the franchise tag number, which means it's the full $20 million on your books right now. If you sign him to an extension, even if it's more than $20 million a year, you could make this year's cap hit $8 million because you can, you know, basically, you can prorate the signing bonus. They need the money for Amari. They need the money for Zeke. They need the money for Dak. Like, this was what the situation the Cowboys were always going to be in was you're going to have to make do with essentially the same team as last year, which is one of the reasons why Chris and I both, the $3.5 million gift to Jason Witten, like, you can't get Landon Collins. You can't get Tyrann Mathieu for $3.5 million. I get it. But when you are removing yourself from the market for a position of need,
right,
and you're giving out Lifetime Achievement Award contracts to save a guy from a broadcasting career, that's not how you make your team take the next step in 2019.
Give me a list of priorities if you're running the Cowboys right now that you think absolutely have to get signed at this point, because Nick mentioned it. You got Dak, you got Zeke, you got Amari, you got DeMarcus. You have a number of people, and then you have your defense, your safeties, your offensive line. Where do you think
You have to sign your guys. You have to sign your guys that have played well. Like, for one, they're going to definitely pay with the franchise tag. They've let you know, we're going to pay him. DeMarcus Lawrence, we put a tag on him. He's earned this. He's a Pro Bowl player. He's earned this. But one of the names people aren't mentioning is Byron Jones. Their ability to move him from safety to corner. He was a high draft pick a number of years ago. They also have to spend some money on him. So you can't go out and give money to all these other guys. I know it's sexy. I know Earl went to school at University of Texas. He's made a, you know, outwardly, he said, I want to go to, but that doesn't mean he's a good fit. And I don't know why people keep saying it. And just because you can get him, that does can't get him, that does not mean you're going to have a problem defensively. The Dallas got those mid-round picks. You can get a guy. In this year's defense, this is the best defensive prospects I have seen in the NFL since I've been in television. I'm talking about we cannot have an offensive player drafted in the first round, and you will be satisfied. 32 defensive players. I mean, they are stacked. Defensive linemen, linebackers, safety. So you can utilize the draft to get you a young guy who can run, who you can get him under that rookie deal and still have a great defense next year. So I'm not consumed with the Dallas Cowboys and who they're going to have at safety. They got bigger priorities, and I believe those will be filled.
When Chris talks about the draft, I know we've spent a lot of time talking about Haskins and Murray, but other than those quarterbacks, the best players, the most talked about players, are they're almost all either edge guys, defensive tackles, Greedy Williams from LSU. The first non-quarterback offensive player we're talking about this draft is who? That DK Metcalf, the kid from Ole Miss, who is an absolute workout freak, but was not a wildly productive college football player. For the Cowboys, the Byron Jones thing, that's the forward-thinking thing that I hope the Cowboys are looking at, because he's not a pending free agent. People should understand that. He's got a year left, but he played great football last year. And if you don't re-sign him now, then you're in the franchise tag game again. Then all of a sudden you're in the same position.
He has the ability to play corner and safety.
Right.
None of those guys on that list have that ability.
And so, I mean, last year he was a great football player, had an excellent season. They didn't have the foresight. They weren't able to sign DeMarcus Lawrence early. So because of that, they franchised him last year. That's $17 million on their cap. Franchise him this year, it's $20 million on their cap. So when we're talking about guys that they got to re-sign, Byron Jones, he's not one of the guys you could lose, but he's one of the guys you want to re-sign now. So the money, they got $28 million left in cap space. How much do we think Zeke, Dak, Amari are going to get raises? Plus, if you include Byron Jones, that's basically all your money.
There's your money right there. All right, take a break. Back to basketball. Big night last night. Did LeBron passing Michael Jordan in scoring cement him as the GOAT? It's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, FS1 NBA insider Chris Broussard joins us now. Hey, Chris.
My brother.
Welcome, man.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about LeBron in a bit. I was just waiting for you. I didn't know if you wanted to take a full sip. I was just giving you the courtesy of...
What are we talking about here?
Quenching your thirst, CC. We're talking KD and the Warriors, Broussard. Golden State trying to win their third straight NBA title. Golden State also trying to win back the services of Kevin Durant long term. According to reports, some members of the Warriors organization feel KD has one foot out the door already. Broussard, you mentioned there might be issues with him coming to New York at this point. Why would Kevin Durant stay in Golden State? What's the case for him staying where he is?
Yeah, I've made the argument on this show before that I think it'd be great for him to stay and go for a fourth straight ring.
Yes.
All the guys, Magic, MJ, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, all that he's compared to have never won four straight. Only Bill Russell.
Right.
And so if he had that on his resume, I mean, that'd be huge. But watching this season unfold with how difficult, you know, the struggles they're having this year, he and Draymond going at it, the tension there is with the team, there's a reason those guys didn't win four straight, you know, because it's very difficult mentally, emotionally, not to mention physically. So it appears that that would be not quite unrealistic, but very difficult. If they win it this year, for them to come back and do it a four straight year, it just might be too tough. And look, he's got two great options, in my opinion, New York and the Clippers outside of Golden State. So I as much as I'd like to see him get four straight, I don't think he would.
Why do you think he is? I know we've talked a lot about Kyrie's levels of happiness and his inner, but I thought the other night when he was, after they got blown out by the Celtics, him, I don't want to say going at Steve Kerr, but his post-game press conference juxtaposed to Steph Curry's, where Steph Curry kept the even keel. You said he's the Tim Duncan for – one of you guys said he's Tim Duncan for the Golden State Warriors. And Kerr – I mean, Kerr predates Durant. And Kerr is incredibly popular within that locker room. And Durant just seems generally irritated with the situation.
Well, I thought he had a legitimate reason after the game. What he questioned was, Steve Kerr talked about, now we need to play, we need to be a little more mean, a little more intense before and during the season. And, angry. And earlier in the season, they were talking about, man, let's play with a little more joy. Let's be happy. So that was the message point.
That's Kerr's mantra, really. Well, it was the joy, and then he contradicted it.
Yeah, but now because we lose this game, don't go behind the team, because he should have told the team that after the game, before he told the media that. Like, you can't change your messaging point to the media before you talk to the team, because you have to be consistent. And he said, oh, he said that. Oh, I thought he was talking about play with some joy. So that's what he should be able to do. He has the right to be able to do that, because Steve Kerr changed a message point that we had. And then he went on to being like, no, it's about playing with some more joy. So I don't have a problem with that. I think people miscalculate the amount of stress that NBA players, and I'm going to say it's stress, because dealing with the media, I'm part of the media now. But we used to have a system in Minnesota. And when you only have 16 games and you only play one game a week, all right, and we only typically have two media appearances that we have to do. We have one scheduled during the week, and we're definitely going to talk after the game. But you're talking about 82 games. Now you're talking about all these shoot-arounds.
Right, right, twice
There's a day. There's so many more opportunities. So I'm not making excuses for NBA players, but I'm looking at the schedule. I'm looking at how many sound bites, how many times people can get them tripped up. And I didn't like talking to the media because, to me, I got a job to do. And catching the football going across the middle, being in shape, has nothing to do with the media. They might think they help you do your job. You help them do their job. So I'm taking it back to my days, and there was also some
contentious moments.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Like, because I can't answer all the questions, and I can't tell them the truth all the time. So what these media, the basketball players, what they're facing with the media, we should get used to this and maybe have some, not empathy, but understanding of how many times, how many days a week they have a mic in their face where someone is trying to trip them up. Because we don't see all and hear all the sound bites and everything that you get. You get a lot of bad questions from local people, people trying to make a mark, trying to get a sound bite, trying to please their boss.
Trying to bait you.
Yeah, trying to please their boss. So I wouldn't be surprised. I know the NBA, they made the season longer, but this is not going to get any easier for the players to deal with. Now, it's a part of the job. It's a part of your responsibility, but we better understand what they're going through, and we better start looking at it a little bit different if we're going to understand this modern-day athlete.
When I was a beat writer covering, you know, the Cavaliers, the Nets, the Knicks, I talked to some players. I was at every shoot-around. I was at every practice. I'm in the locker room before every game, after game. And I would get sick of going seeing the players. Because it's like every day we're asking a lot of the same questions, and I would talk to them. I know you get tired of seeing me.
Right.
I'm here. So there should be an understanding. And I think with KD, I mentioned that I've been told KD and Kyrie were a little leery of New York. Not saying they won't come, but a little bit leery just because of the media.
It's something that should be discussed between the two of them.
They should consider it. Now, what I would say is that when you played and when I was a beat writer before the internet, it was a little different. New York was more different than everywhere else.
New
York's known for sensationalism. Right. And the internet was just come, but it wasn't as big of a factor as now.
Yes.
But the internet, New York's known for sensationalism, tabloid journalism. Now that's kind of throughout the country. Because, you know, you can
Twitter.
So it's not right.
That's
so, well,
why I don't
it
think
won't
going
be
to the
as
Knicks
different.
Is as jarring.
Right, I agree. It's a little bit different, but it's not as much.
I understand there's going to be every city doesn't have a New York Post, and I get that. And every city doesn't have the intense scrutiny. But, you know, Philly's pretty intense, by the way. Boston local media is pretty intense.
And the national media
but
is covering
it anyway. But the national media covers everyone.
Right.
The internet covers everyone. And so a lot of these guys, it's not a beef typically with the local guys. Not all.
You know what I mean? Right.
Because they do
not
get relationships with them. And for Durant, when it comes to the Warriors, everything he has done off the court over the last 9 to 12 months has been setting up for New York. Now, everything he's doing with Rich Kleinman, the office space that they're trying to set up, there's the element of LeBron's now on the West Coast, kind of is sucking up that air from the media, the Kevin Durant's ability to go to New York and be the star in the biggest city in the country. And Kevin Durant is in, and Rich Kleinman, to his credit, the mogul business. They have real estate deals. They're doing media stuff, their own media company. So it would be, to me, it would take a massive shift or a seismic event for Kevin Durant to change that course.
I don't think he'll go to New York by himself, and I don't think he should.
But because of
if
the move they made.
If you go with Kyrie or somebody
KD
else.
KD will be a huge draw. Like, because of the move they made, it was one of the reasons the Kristaps trade, even if you love Kristaps as a player, was such a great move for the Knicks. Because now they don't have to do anything this summer to be able to sign
to get
two guys.
KD will be talking with AD, with Kyrie. I just don't think you should go there alone because you won't win at a high level alone.
No, not in the NBA.
And if you don't win in New York, it's horrible. And that's where the media will really get bad. Let me say this last thing quickly about KD. In discussions with him and what he said about Kerr the other night, one thing I've learned about KD, he just wants to speak his mind. And whether it's some no-name going at him on Instagram, whether it's a media person saying something, he's going to confront you. Or Steve Kerr. He's going to say his mind just because that seems to be the type of person he
is. Can I follow up? Just one quick question. I'm sorry to something you said about winning in New York. What do you think winning in New York means, though? Like, you said it's horrible
winning
if you don't win.
If KD went to New York and won a title,
that's the best. But I'm
it
saying,
would mean no, more. Oh, he's got to win a championship.
Compared to where they were, all you got to do at this point for the last couple of years, get them into the playoffs.
That'd be nice initially.
No, no, no. That's franchise
initially,
and that's local
right.
people.
Right.
But KD is trying to be one of the biggest names that's ever played in sports, and how that gets him into other businesses. No, we're fans, all right? He's not a fan. He's making a decision that would change his life. That's why New York is a perfect fit for the next one.
All right, we got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, why was Rondo blowing off his teammates yesterday? That's next on First Things First. FS1's your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the big personalities on the big stories. We got some big personalities right here on this desk. We get you started here on First Things First. Catch it on Monday through Friday only on
Who
FS1.
Gets them started, Jenna Wolf?
I get them started,
there
Nick
you
Ray.
Go. Well done,
back
Jenna
here
Wolf.
With Chris Broussard, another big
keep
personality.
That, yes.
that
keep
one
her.
I can
that
keep.
One. She
one.
Can show up on
awesome.
The show.
Absolutely.
Her, the British lady, bring them back.
Here's the deal
Jenna
with
Wolf, bye-bye.
All right, here's the deal with the Celtics, Broussard. Sometimes they look really good and sometimes they look really bad, but almost always Kyrie Irving is right there in the middle of it. Can't seem to escape the finger pointing this season. Charles Barkley had some harsh words for Kyrie, calling him, quote, one of the most miserable people I've ever seen. Broussard, you agree with Chuck?
Well, look, it was kind of a little bit funny what he said and all that, but we have to realize we've seen a lot of people with a lot of money, a lot of success, not be happy, you know, and be miserable.
Time.
So
we just don't have a mic in front of them.
Well, right.
Doing
and, you,
their job.
And you see people, you know, do things. So unfortunately, money, as great as it is, and it answers a lot of problems, there's no doubt, but it doesn't always cure unhappiness.
The human condition.
Right. Now, I hope Kyrie is not miserable. All right. But if he's not, I'm assuming he's not, he needs to look at what Chuck said, though, and say, is this what I'm projecting, though? You know, and change my demeanor.
I like that.
Change the way I'm acting. Because hope, like, if he's miserable, then you need to get some help.
You're saying listen to it.
Right.
Before you just totally disregard it, listen to it. Why would someone who's covering this game see?
Exactly.
Is that what they see?
Exactly, right. Chris. I that's what he needs to do. And, you know, and he also needs to sit back and say, maybe I'm not just enjoying all the blessings I have. Let me look at the good things rather than looking at, yeah, I don't like dealing with the media, and you brought up some great points, and it's true. But let me look at the great benefits that I have, the blessings I have, so he can celebrate the great things he has in life.
The one thing that in dealing with especially these NBA players, because that's what we're getting at now. We're getting guys that are starting to react as if, you know, they don't want to talk to the media, or them playing and being in the limelight is not part of the overall scheme. And they're not pleased with the type of attention that they're getting. So for me as an NFL player, it's totally different. The amount of times you have to meet with the media. We had it structured. I had one scheduled appointment during and after the game, I would typically meet with the media. But also, I would do this. If someone else had a big game and at my locker, I would address people briefly. I wouldn't go into the main room if they didn't. If someone else had a big game, I would address people at my locker. And before going into the press room, I'd slip off and be off into my car. And it wasn't that I was mad. It wasn't that I was jealous. Now, people wrote things, oh, Chris Carter, he missed the media session. No, I didn't. I was at my locker, but there were less media requirements. And I know myself, man, I was not happy. And I know there was a few people that I went after because I wasn't happy after practice, before practice, having to answer the redundancy of questions. And there's certain things and there's certain questions, they get you upset when you're talking about your teammates and things like that.
Chris, did you ever interview Patrick Ewing when he was playing? Patrick Ewing had an issue with lights. If a cameraman put the lights on, he hated it. He was miserable. He would snap at you. And admittedly, he's like, shut your lights off. I don't want, and everyone was just trying to do their jobs. Then he went into broadcasting. I spoke to him many years later, and it was, I feel bad the way I reacted. I feel bad the way I snapped. I don't have any of that attention around me now. I wonder, you know, knowing now what I knew then, if I would have handled it differently, if it would have carved a different path for me, if it would have scoped something out differently in my career, maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't. There are a lot of players who don't like it now,
right,
who understand
and they become
it
part
later.
Of the media.
Right.
That's commonplace for a guy. And I dealt with Patrick and other players who, Patrick really didn't have a great relationship with the media.
Right.
And somewhat, you know, again, I get it because New York, they went at him hard.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes your words are twisted and things are sensationalized. But one thing I used to always look at the Knicks before I even started covering them, you would see on SportsCenter, all of their interviews were like in the parking lot. Like the media would have to go get them outside in the parking lot by their car to chase them down.
Right. Mason interviews.
Yes, I mean, they're running from the media. So KD and Kyrie, they're not the first ones to deal with this. But to your point, technology, now they're out in the public eye even more than they used to be.
Listen, I'm certain of it. There are people watching this right now saying, boo-hoo, cry me a river. You make all this money, you have all this fame, what do you have to worry about? And they're saying that from air-conditioned apartment. And my life is hard, man. I've got a job I don't like. I'm trying to struggle to pay the bills. And there's someone, maybe in Baton Rouge, thinking, if I could just get an air-conditioned apartment, right, it would solve everything. That's all I would need. And there's someone somewhere else in the world saying, looking at that person in Baton Rouge in the air conditioning and saying, man, if I could just not have to walk an hour to get water for the day. No matter where you are, you normalize eventually,
right,
your circumstances, and it does not cure overall general happiness. I get it. Life is easier with money, of course. And there are more fun things to do when you are a superstar NBA player than when you're someone working multiple jobs just to pay the bills. No doubt about it. But there's always someone that's got it better than you. And there's always someone that thinks, if I only had it as good as you, it would solve all my problems. What you were alluding to earlier is people that are very, we see a lot of people, not athletes typically, but very famous, very successful people that are in other elements of the entertainment industry, struggle so much with happiness that they fall into deep depression.
Right.
How many of our stars, musicians, right, or actors have either overdosed or suicide? Like, this is going to be consistent throughout. And Kyrie, to his detriment, has been very honest about all of it. Like, he's worn his emotions on his sleeve to a degree, which has made him more of a topic than he wants to be.
I think we do a terrible job of trying to appropriate sports skills or gifts with normal living skills. If a guy can shoot from 27 feet in a ridiculous fashion, we just think that the media and everything else that goes with being with that gift, that they're going to be able to handle that. We misappropriate that. We act as if they're going to be great parents. They're going to be great friends. No, they're a great athlete, and typically off the court, off the field, off the baseball diamond, they are just normal to average people. And in some of their skill levels, it's poor.
Right.
Now, we know their athletic skill is they're at a supreme level, at a very, very elite level. But some of the other things they can struggle with in life. But we don't give them that because they're rich, because they're Kevin Durant, because they're Kyrie Irving. And off the court, there is some normality. They just want to be normal. And society typically won't let them.
And I would take it even a step further. Typically, if you reach this level of elite skill at anything at that young of an age, not only when it comes to the other things in your life are you just normal, but very often you're distorted.
Right.
You've spent so much time and attention honing this specific thing, your other skills are deteriorated. They're actually below whatever the
underdeveloped.
Yeah, absolutely. They're below
one
whatever
the
average
things, honestly,
something
about LeBron James. He's very well-rounded human being to have such success that he has.
All right, we got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, did LeBron passing Jordan and scoring cement him as the GOAT? That's ahead on First Things First. Viral. See, LeBron James passed Michael Jordan on the all-time points list last night, but the real accomplishment was being gifted a necklace by 2 Chainz after the game.
He almost got gifted a phone charger, too. Someone's phone charger was on the court.
All right, here, Broussard, who wore it better, LeBron, Nick, or 2 Chainz?
Well, they did. All right, I'll give the graphic staff credit.
Nick's looks fresh.
They finally
like
gave me a real chain, not the mall kiosk. $18
yeah. high school
right chain.
Yeah, they did give you a big chain.
No, those,
no, those are diamonds.
Pearls.
That's a good looking one.
That's a good
you
looking
chain. You can't tell me those don't that's look like pearls, Broussard.
We all can
you
tell you
and
that.
Marnie and them are only two. Everyone else knows that's bling bling. Lord help me. Send someone for me right now.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.